up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Trance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Trance, what's going on, man?
Not much, buddy. A big Canucks win over a very tired Flames team that looked like they ran out of gas. What? Early?
Start of the second period?
I'd say start of the first. Yeah. I'd say by about the 7 minute mark, Calgary looked kind of dead on their feet. But they got that late goal in the first period, which sort of disguised it. Canucks played their most dominant 20 minute stretch of the season, I thought, in the second period. Completely throttled the Flames. JT Miller took over the game. Patterson had a productive evening, and now the vibes are very good in Vancouver. The Canucks first in the Pacific Division.
I should mention, we got a big show coming up today as well. Wednesday is always exciting here. Of course, we'll do the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. That's coming up in just a few minutes here in the first segment. Of course, at 1 o'clock, as usual on Wednesday, Jason Bukala, our pal from Sportsnet, joins us. And very special today, if you were watching on TV, you saw that he was there in the crowd watching the Canucks beat the Flames last night at Rogers Arena. Former Canuck Ryan Kessler will join us at 12:30.
And at the Roxy afterwards.
And at the
entertaining crowds. We'll ask him about both.
Not the first time he's done the Rogers Arena to the Roxy duo in one night.
Equally impactful visits to Vancouver landmarks.
You got to pay your respects to the Roxy when you come back. It's like a pilgrimage. So very excited to chat with Ryan Kessler about his appearance at the game. And you saw the love from the crowd. That was really cool. And he looked back a little bit at his career, get his thoughts on this year's edition of the team as well. And of course, you know, a topic on everyone's mind now is, look, we've seen it with Kevin Bieksa. We've seen it with Alex Edler. Could a one-day contract to retire as a Canuck be in the offing for Ryan Kessler? There certainly seems to be the appetite from the fans after what we saw last night. So we'll hear from Ryan Kessler about that when he joins us at 12:30.
Well, and with Kessler, it's a little bit more, you know, five years ago, probably today, like pretty close to 5 years ago today, I interviewed Kessler ahead of the Sedin twin retirement. And he was genuinely nervous about returning to take part in those festivities because of the probability in his mind that he was going to get booed at Rogers Arena. Now, he didn't. And to see last night the very spontaneous Ryan Kessler chance, I mean, it just shows you how far things have come in terms of that relationship, the fact that all has been forgiven, and the fact that a guy who genuinely bled for this franchise, right? Lots of guys compete hard for a franchise, but Ryan Kessler, given what he sacrificed in terms of his well-being and health, both in the moment and long-term, frankly, to play this willful, assertive, Selke caliber type game for this franchise, I mean, it's good to see. He deserved to have that level of forgiveness from the fans. And I, you know, it was obviously clear that Sedin night that enough time had passed, but that chant, the reaction from the crowd, I think really cemented it. So I'm curious to hear from him. I guarantee you that it was an emotional and fun evening for him last night at Rogers.
Absolutely. Looking forward to chatting with Ryan Kessler at 12:30. And, you know, just to dig into the game a little bit before we get Taylor and Dhaliwal on here in a few minutes, you know, as you mentioned some of the big talking points, right? Elias Pettersson has 2 points for the second straight game. JT Miller with a really strong performance after he was critical of his effort, and we were critical of his effort on Saturday against Edmonton.
First time Pettersson has had multiple points in consecutive games since the Canucks went Harlem Globetrotters on the city of New York back in January. So, what, that's 10 months?
It's been a long time coming.
So, yeah, nice to see for sure.
And we can talk more about what we were seeing specifically from Elias Pettersson, you know, the is he back conversation, all of that we can get into. I do think it's worth focusing, though, on another of the big storylines last night, which was, of course, Jonathan Lekkerimäki making his NHL debut for the team and getting a big opportunity right away, skating next to JT Miller and Pugh Suter on that, you know, top line in the top six. He got power play 1 minutes as well. And I think you know, there who was it we were talking with, the like backhanded compliments? I think it was Sarah Sivian in the NHL.
Right.
And one of them about rookies is like, well, he didn't look out of place. Right. And it's like, that's kind of code for, well, he didn't do much. But Lekkomäki was more than that. It's not that he didn't look out of place. I think you could easily say he looked like he belonged, right? You saw some of the skill, got a couple of shots off on net. It wasn't a dominant performance or anything like that, but it was a good showing. And the most notable thing probably after it was the praise that he got from Rick Tocchet, and yep, specifically how Rick Tocchet praised him, right? Not just kind of vague, like, oh, hey, he gave a good effort, but specifically, he's a smart player. He's working on his play without the puck. And to talk about him having a defensive conscience, something to work with there going forward.
Well, which was good. I mean, how often do we pivot off of a discussion on our program, a mild disagreement between us in real time, spun it into a Rick Tocchet question? He gave a fascinating answer, actually. Maybe we'll clip it so we can get into it, although I feel like we're too busy today. It might be
we're very
for
busy
tomorrow, ahead of his second game. I want to bring this up to you, and maybe I'll bring it up on the crossover too. Big picture, right? Lekkomäki coming in, playing, you know, pretty high up the lineup. He missed a few shifts in the third as they were holding the lead. So it's not like he played top line minutes. In fact, he played a bottom six sort of disbursement of minutes, but, you know, didn't look out of place in terms of the backhanded compliment. And, like, he played well. There were moments where he played really well. There were moments where he seemed a little peripheral. I thought JT Miller and Pugh Suter were so good last night, especially on the wall, that they kind of made life relatively straightforward for him, which is good. You want to see,
that's a great thing for them to do, well, and for them to be able to do.
Exactly. You know, I thought Miller, more than almost any game this season, I actually feel like, given the conversation that I've seen online and the focus on Pettersson and you know, is he back and on, I actually feel like we're missing kind of the story. I thought that was Miller's best performance of the season by a mile, and I want to get into that more too in the crossover. But big picture, what matters, right, is, like, think about a team like the Stars and sort of how they were able to, you know, hit this different level. That, like, I was pretty low on the Stars 3 years ago. But then they kept churning out this Wyatt Johnston, Logan Stankoven class of player. And
Thomas Harley.
Yeah, Thomas Harley. All of a sudden, they're looking pretty scary. The Winnipeg Jets, right? I mean, look, the Winnipeg Jets, that Dubois trade is paying real dividends. One thing that's amazing about the Jets is, you know, you can have these games where Scheifele and Ehlers and Kyle Connor do literally nothing. And it's like, yeah, but Kupari scored and Iafallo scored and Vilardi scored and you're fine. Lekkomäki is the first Canucks draft pick since the class of 2019 to play an NHL game. Like, this team has not gotten an NHL game from a player they drafted until last night, since Judd Brackett departed the organization. That's how long ago you have to go.
Yeah. So what is Hoglander and Pod Colson? Because they're 2019.
Well, McDonough be technically, because he played six. But it's McDonough or Shelovs, whatever you want to say. Point being, it's been a long time since this organization had a source of drafted, affordable labor in the lineup. And if Lekkomäki can come in and contribute, even in a limited capacity, it's a big, big development for this club.
All right, we'll talk a lot more about what we saw from Lekkomäki, the Canucks win last night, Ryan Kessler, so much stuff to get into on the show today. And let's go to one of our favorite segments. It's time for the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall. They're part of Donnie and Dolly. Monday to Friday, you can check it out on Check TV, 10 a.m. to noon. And fellas, how's it going today?
Very well, very well.
Awesome.
We had a visit from somebody you're going to have at the bottom of the hour.
Yes. Earlier today. Well, lucky him. He gets to talk to all four of us today.
We should have just plugged him into this segment, gentlemen.
That's so true. We should have done the crossover with Brian Kessler.
If we'd been on the same page, we might have done that.
Yeah. The one thing that stuck out for Rick and I and Ryan as well is that he said, I don't know if this is for the first time, but he talked about regretting having asked for a trade back in 2014, an ask that was, or a wish that was granted, and off he went to the Anaheim Ducks. And here he is in Vancouver, clearly loving it. He just expressed his love for the city over and over again during the interview. And as time has gone by, I think those feelings of regret have gotten a little bit a little bit deeper. But, man, he wanted out then at the time, as hard as it is to believe for young people following the National Hockey League these days, the Ducks were a Stanley Cup contender, at least everybody thought they were, and it didn't work out that way.
He sounds like, look, he did say to us, look, I made a mistake, and, you know, he regrets it. We've all made mistakes in life. He's allowed to do the same and say, hey, look, mm-hmm. I made a mistake back in, you know, 2014, and he was blown away by the fans chanting his name last night. There was an autograph. I think there was a long wait to get his autograph after the game. He ended up at the Roxy last night on the stage.
Singing.
Boy, that takes us back, Donnie, doesn't it? But anyways, not that we were singing.
I don't remember much from the Roxy through the years.
Funny how that works.
It was always later in the night when you made your way there.
Yeah.
Ryan might have been the same way.
I had a few regrettable nights there. But anyways, listen, he feels like a guy that he looked at what Bieksa got. He looked at what Edler got. Sign a contract, retire as a Canuck. You guys also need to know he's very tight with his agent, Kurt Overhart, who's mm-hmm. a pretty powerful guy. You know, and Kurt is also doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, trying to get that relationship with the Vancouver Canucks back and on good terms. And I think he, deep down in his heart, wants to retire as a Canuck. He wants to repair the damage. He says he made a mistake. He clearly said that on our show today, and I think it's just a guy that just says, you know what, I love Vancouver. He said the best 2 months of his life in hockey were 2011, the Nashville series where he dominated. Barry Trotz said after, we could not stop Kessler. And, you know, it just sounds to Donnie and I like a guy that wants to repair the damage and –
And maybe get into the Ring of Honor.
And maybe get into the Ring of Honor. But yeah. Step by step, let's retire.
Or be able to retire as a Canuck. Sorry, Rick. You know what it reminded me of, guys, was, and I know he was worried about the reception he would receive. Remember when Todd Bertuzzi came back a few years back?
Yeah.
And I think he was, you know, worried about the events of 04, was it March 8th, 2004 against Colorado. But it was a love-in. And that was very much the case last night for Ryan Kessler, who's in town, by the way, for the Pat Quinn tournament in Burnaby. And his kid sounds like he's a stud. And he dropped that their team is 30-1 so far. And he hates drop passes, and he's a hard-ass coach. It was fun. They'll have fun talking to him.
The Ring of Honor discussion, right? Because the thing that's interesting about Kessler is – you know, only 655 games played in Vancouver Canucks history, so that's outside the top 10. 182 goals, that's outside the top 10. 393 points, that's the same amount as Brendan Morrison. It's fewer than Brock Besser has in a Canucks jersey. It's outside the top 10. And yet, his peak... Ooh, what happened to my voice there? His peak... As a 40-goal scorer.
Happens to all of us eventually, buddy.
Oh, man.
Congratulations on finally hitting puberty.
Last night.
I can't wait to get hair in places in my body I don't have it. His peak was so high, right? Like, he's the only Selke winner in franchise history. I mean, that's a major NHL award. There aren't a lot of Vancouver Canucks players in league history who've won major awards, period. I mean, you're really talking about Henrik Sedin. And Quinn Hughes. Like, honestly, that's kind of it. I guess Pavel Bure won the Calder. Elias Pettersson won the Calder. Mm. The teams shared a Jennings. Like, it's a pretty rare accomplishment. Yeah. How do you sort of weight that, though, when clearly what the club has tended to reward with the Ring of Honor has been, like, long service time, right? And sort of the additional value or sort of the other intangibles that a player brought. You think about Burrows and Kurtenbach and Thomas Gradin and on down the list. It's sort of more about like service and tenure than it is about that peak. So Kessler sort of occupies this very interesting middle ground in Canucks history, and I do think it's kind of challenging to figure out how the club should honor him or honor that legacy or preserve that history, just given... You know, how it ended, sure, that influences things. The short length of time, relatively speaking, that he spent with the franchise. And yet, the fact that he was truly one of the, you know, five or six best forwards to ever don a Canucks jersey to this point. I may end up moving a little bit down that list, depending on sort of how things unfold with Pettersson and Miller and some of the guys currently in the lineup.
Well, I think Rick feels that Ryan Kessler maybe should get up there, but certainly not before Tony Tanti. So that has to be taken care of first. And you look at his numbers, you might agree with that. Right. But you know what, guys? I think that this city and this franchise, you know, loves the numbers, right? You can't argue with a Sedin and the and both Sedins and the big numbers and Trevor Linden. But I also think this city, and you mentioned Kurtenbach and Harold Snepps, this city loves guys who are tough and play with a real edge. And was there anybody who did that more in his peak, at the very least, than Ryan Kessler? You know, the best offensive forward in the league, according to the people who make the votes, back in 2010, 2011. And I think there's the feeling when things are tough for the Canucks, when things aren't going well, we need that type of player. We need a Ryan Kessler out there to cause a ruckus out there. Yep. This city really loves players like that. So I think you combine that with the numbers, at the very least, it's a pretty good debate.
You're joking about the Tanti thing, right?
Don? Well, I'm not joking about it. Are you serious, Thomas? Are you going to challenge me on this? Were you around when Tony Tanti scored 40-plus goals?
I mean,
years in a row in the Smythe division?
I was just
when
saying.
When they were getting pounded by...
See, I wasn't joking.
Serious? Are you going to take me on?
I was just saying, though, like one thing that I worried about with Kessler, it's like he's not top 10 in NHL in Canucks games played. He's played 120 more games for the franchise than Tony Tanti. Like, if we're accepting that longevity is one of the marks against Kessler, Tanti's got that, you know, to an even greater degree. Plus, didn't win a major NHL award like Kessler did, no?
Yeah, but he was a difference maker. You can't deny that, Thomas. He was a difference maker. Look, Harold Snepps is
But they were a good team. That's what's going to be against Tony Tanti.
I do get that. But, I mean, you're saying don't put him in the Ring of Honor.
No. I would just say the idea that he should go ahead of Kessler, I mean... Kessler won a major NHL award. That has to matter, right? Like, it has to be weighted relative to their era. And you win the Selke, that's, you know, a sort of quantifiable proof that you were among the best players in the league of that era, right? I just think that has to be weighted a little bit differently.
Keep in mind, Thomas, all right, and Jamie, that Tony Tanti played in the 80s.
Yep.
And Rick feels that anybody who performed in the 80s should be in the Ring of Honor. And that includes Cyndi Lauper. He would like to see her in the Ring of Honor. Her name in the Ring.
Hey, Schmeel, Gradin, Fraser, Petri, Skrico, Tony Tanti, Patrick Sundstrom, bring it on. I'm here all day. But you look at Harold Snepps in there in the Ring of Honor, and nothing against Harold. I was at the Coliseum yelling Harold when he carried the puck.
You still do.
I still do. But, you know, he's in there. Is that a popular choice? Who's picking the Ring of Honor? Who are the people sitting in a room picking this? What's the mandate? There's a million things at play here, Thomas, right? And Tony Tanti, and for those of us, he did score a ton of goals on weak teams, and there is a ton of people in this city that do remember Tony and do remember what he brought to the table, right? And so that's one. And Donnie, you've backed me up on Tony Tanti. You've actually said that Tony Tanti should
I think
be.
He gets overlooked.
He gets overlooked.
The reason is, and I don't know if this is fair or not, but I just talked about the teams he played on were very good. Mm. You know, with the odd blip here and there, era past 82 was
awful.
Pretty
but
tough.
Rick,
that
was
goes, bad. Like, but Tony's individual accomplishments are great.
I think the question of what's the mandate is a good one, and I wonder if the mandate has changed maybe a little bit, because I look at a guy like Alex Edler, and I think when Edler left and retired, I think we all probably said, well, he'll be in the Ring of Honor, right? You just look at pure longevity.
He still should be.
Sure, and I'm not even here to say it's
what's
the right
wrong
decision.
With my voice?
Yeah. But, you know, you look at all the records he held for defensemen, how long he played, part of successful teams.
You were yelling
teams.
Harold somewhere.
All of that. He felt like a lock for the Ring of Honor, and obviously he does the retirement, the one-day retirement instead. And I wonder if maybe the standard has changed a little bit. But on the positive side for that, you know, I look at the Kessler situation. I agree it's a good debate, but I just think the important thing is to honor him in some way.
Yes.
And you've set the template now with Bieksa and Edler. There's a, if you don't want to do the Ring of Honor, if you've changed that criteria a little bit for whatever reason, okay, fine, but you still have a way that you can honor this guy. You can give him his night at Rogers Arena.
Yeah, I just think the major NHL award should loom really large. It's happened like 5 times in franchise history. And you know, you look at the guys that have been honored by the Canucks in building, right? You've got Luongo and Kirk McLean, but among the skaters, you know, Henrik, Daniel, Trevor Linden, that's 1, 2, 3. Those are 3 guys who have all played 1,000 games or more for the Canucks franchise. Their numbers are retired, obviously Naslund as well, and then Pavel Bure, who was a Hall of Famer in his peak years in Vancouver. And then you sort of have, like, everyone else in that Ring of Honor is either, like, the first captain, an Orland Kurtenbach guy, or they're in the top 10 in games played, right? Like, Wise Harold snaps up there, you bring that up, right? It's like Stan Smeal, 896 games. Well, his number's retired, excuse me. But it's Burrows, 822, Snap, 781, Olin, 770, right? Edler, by the way, at 925, like, his number should be in the Ring of Honor based on the standard that the club has used. And then I think Kessler's an interesting debate because that Selke, man, I just weight that really heavily. I think that shows what sort of impact you had relative to your peers when you were in your peak years in Vancouver. So anyway, that's just my view of it. Sorry, Rick, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I think with Ryan Kessler as well, and again, I think at the very least it's a good debate.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, his kid's in town playing hockey, Riker, and you know, you have kids, and I think that as you get older and that happens, and you say to yourself, what if one day, you know, he comes into this building and he sees Dad's name up in the Ring of Honor? I think it's really important for him.
Yep.
But at the very least, I think you're right. You know, would the ceremony be enough? Maybe not, but at least it would be something.
Okay, on the game, let's get into the game last night. We just got a few more minutes here. We'll have to let you guys go a little earlier than normal because we got Kessler on the other side. But, lots of talking points coming out of that one. What did you guys think of Lucker Mackey's debut? I thought it looked pretty solid for him. And, you know, more important even than what he did on the ice, I thought, was the praise from Rick Tocchet after the game, speaking about Lucker Mackey. And, you know, do you guys see a potential rest of the season fit in the lineup or a spot in the lineup as they get healthy for Lucker Mackey?
Well, he got more ice time than 3 or 4 forwards, and he talked about him having a defensive conscience. And I think that you really don't hear that about young players. And Thomas, I don't know if you noticed this, but fairly early in the game, first period, there was the cardinal rule broken by Jonathan Lucker Mackey. Crosses the opposition blue line, makes kind of a drop pass, and there's a turnover at the opposition blue line. And that is usually death for a young player from a head coach. He stuck with him.
Absolutely.
You know, was on the bumper spot in the power play. So he allowed him that one mistake. So there's some belief there, it seems, from the head coach. And that bodes well, as they say, for the young man.
If you're going to play high up in the lineup, you got to have hockey sense. He displayed it. He's a great thinker of the game. And you know what? When you can play with the guys up high, he didn't get dropped to line 3 or 4 last night. He stuck high on his line the entire game, which was important for me. And, you know, 14 minutes, 2 shots, 2 games. The giveaway thing Donnie talks about, Lucker Mackey was lucky last night because there was a ton of guys with giveaways. I think they had 14 in the first period. I think they ended up with 32.
They did. Yeah.
So puck management last night for the entire team was horrible. Tocchet won't be happy with that. But look, I don't want to put too much pressure on this kid. He's still young. You know, Besser's out, obviously. He's got an opportunity. If he can keep doing the play without the puck and keep the coach happy there, he'll stay on that line. But don't expect a ton of goals right off the bat. He's going to feel it out. He's got new line mates, the whole 9 yards. But just a good start for him last night, very solid. But I don't think we should be putting too much expectations and heat on this kid. I thought he fared well last night.
I love Sherwood last night, too.
Oh,
I mean, that's you could say that after
every night. I was going to say, everyone loves him every night, man. He's speaking of fan favorites, man, he has gone into that category very, very quickly. All right, we got to let you guys go. Thank you, as always. Good. I wasn't expecting to do the Tony Tanti, Ryan Kessler debate here. But.
And Thomas, do yourself a favor. Google Tony Tanti and do your homework. on Tony Tanti, okay? Before you come at me like that without doing your research, Google Tony Tanti. Talk to me next week. Bye.
All right. Bye, fellas. There they are. That's Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. I like the implication that you don't know who Tony Tanti is.
And that I've never seen
Google him. Oh, he played for the Canucks. Hmm. Interesting.
Well, whenever someone tells me to do my homework, I'm just like, bro, I love homework.
What is this, amateur hour?
Don't tempt me with a good time.
Yeah, like,
pouring over old hockey stuff? Yeah, all right. Anyways, you can check out Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly, Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. We got to take a break here. As mentioned, former Canucks center Ryan Kesler, you saw him in the crowd last night.
No, I just love that sometimes the crossover hits all the, like, hot buttons, and today it was like
just Kesler, Ring of Honor talk.
Relitigate some 1980s Canucks debates. Let's get into
it. Let's really get into it. All right, Ryan Kesler up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance live from the Kintech Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Ryan Kesler is going to join us momentarily here, former Vancouver Canuck. Exciting to get him on the show. Of course, he was at the game last night, having some fun, getting serenaded by the crowd, signing autographs after, at the Roxy after the game. So exciting to get the chance here to chat with Ryan Kesler coming up in just a few minutes. As I said, 650, you can text into the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this one came in from Cam at the farm. He says, it's just afternoon. Let's check in with the Canucks Talk guys. Turns on the radio. Ooh, a Ring of Honor Tony Tanti debate. Turn the radio up. That's from Cam at the farm. I'm going to choose to take that in good faith, non-sarcastically, Cam. I hope you enjoyed the Tony Tanti Ring of Honor debate with Rick Dhaliwal. All right. Now joining us, without further ado here, as mentioned, you saw him at the game last night, former Vancouver Canucks center. He is Ryan Kesler. Ryan, thanks very much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing really well. So what was it like to be at the game, get a chance to watch the Canucks in person, and then also, you know, have some fun with the fans on the Jumbotron? They're chanting your name. What was the experience like last night for you?
It was fun. It was I'm happy I got a chance to go back, and to get that reception from the fans was pretty special. Something I'll never forget.
Ryan, I remember chatting with you 5 years ago or so, and, you know, right before the Sedins had their numbers retired, and you were a little bit nervous about what the reception would be. Ultimately, it was a warm reception that night. But yesterday, shown on the Jumbotron, you chug a beer, you get the Ryan Kesler chant going in arena. I mean, I'm sure that was an emotional experience and a bit of a surprise for you last night.
Yeah, I didn't expect to be on the Jumbotron and then to hear your name chanted, and, you know, to have my son in attendance to see that and experience that, you know, it meant a lot to me.
So you're here for a tournament, the Pat Quinn tournament that your son Riker is playing in, as I understand it, Ryan. What's that been like? What's the tournament been like? How strong's the team? How much fun do you have in coaching?
It's a lot of fun coaching. It actually get out of here. it's been a lot of fun. We just got off the ice. We just practiced today. Tournament starts tomorrow, so it's been a good experience. We came a few days early just to go on a couple hikes and let the families enjoy Vancouver. I came here my first time when I was 15. And played in the Kamloops tournament. We came a few days early and got to experience Vancouver. And it honestly, it's one of those tournaments that I'll never forget. in my entire life, and I'm hoping it does the same for these families.
That's pretty cool that you had that same experience as you were coming up through minor hockey, and now you're coaching your son and the team. I mean, what's it like to kind of see the city, see that experience through his eyes and his teammates' eyes with you coaching now?
It's cool. It's such a beautiful city, and we went on a hike yesterday in Lynn Valley and walked across the suspension bridge and just being able to see a part of the world that they probably never experience and get to share beautiful Vancouver with them. It's been awesome.
Now that you're a coach, I mean, are there things that you look back on from your days and think like, oh man, now I get why my coaches were so frustrated with that, now that you're on the coaching side of things?
These kids helped me so much with my transition to not playing. I was kind of lost there for a couple of years, and just to take all my passion I had for playing and to put it in the coaching and to pay it forward to these boys and teach them the details of the game and you know how I think the game should be played and just be true to themselves and teach them life lessons along the way is something I really enjoy.
Ryan, you know, that difficulty adjusting to life after hockey is something that every player experiences and that we very rarely actually talk about, right? For a player like yourself, yeah, too, just one of the most competitive guys most people in this city have ever watched, I'm sure losing that rush day to day, that excitement, was difficult. What can you share with us about sort of that challenge, that adjustment, why it was so tricky for you to experience?
Well, you know, to be honest, the last couple of years, I hated the game. I didn't enjoy it. The joy was out of it. I was in pain every day. I couldn't walk. I couldn't run. I lived a life that was very painful. And now the fact that I got my quality of life back, and these boys brought the love of the game back to me. And it's something that, you know, I normally don't talk about. I don't like talking about it, but the ability to go to the rink and see the joy on these kids' faces and try to pay it forward as best as I can, it's really, really helped me. If I was in coaching, I don't know what I'd be doing. Right now, I've kind of gone headfirst into this coaching 13, 14-year-olds, so it takes up a lot of my time, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Now, you're on the Canucks Talk podcast, but of course, one of the most memorable Canucks podcasts of the last 5-6 years was yours with Kevin. Any thinking about doing the media thing, coming in and showing us how to do it the right way, Ryan?
I went to that NHL media training camp that they had in September, and they did a really good job. Opened my eyes to maybe something I could do in the future. But right now I'm happy being a dad. I'm happy putting my kids to bed every night and being their Uber driver to sports and school. And I really enjoy just coaching right now. And maybe in a few years that will change and I'll dip my toe into media. But right now I'm really happy just being a coach and being a dad.
So, if you don't mind, though, I'm going to ask you to throw your analyst hat on, because I'm curious to get your perspective on something we saw in the game last night. In particular, you know, JT Miller, another American-born two-way centerman, maybe has been misunderstood for his surliness. I don't know if you can relate to that. But last night, playing with a rookie winger, making his debut, he takes a shot square off the nuts in the first period, and then kind of takes over the game in the second period. Do you see anything that looks familiar to you when you watch him play?
Yeah, he's obviously a special talent. He wears his emotion on his sleeve. And to be honest, you need guys like that in your lineup. You don't want just a bunch of quiet guys that are just happy being there. You want guys to push and challenge their teammates. You want guys that are emotional leaders, and he brings that to this group, and he's a huge part of their success, and I wish I would have had the chance to play with him.
One of the other players, of course, that's always under a lot of tension here in Vancouver is Elias Pettersson. And, you know, I'm not sure how much you've had a chance to watch his game so far this year. Obviously, he had a good game last night, picks up a couple of points, seems like maybe he's starting to turn a corner. You know, from your, thinking back to your time here with the Canucks, when you are maybe struggling to find your game a little bit and there's so much attention on you, you're one of the star players here. I mean, what's that like? How difficult can it be to kind of rebuild that confidence if you're going through a bit of a slump in a market like this?
You know, it's hard, especially in a Canadian city and, you know, making that kind of money and maybe not having the start to the year that you wanted to, but last night he looked good. What impressed me the most was just seeing his demeanor on the ice and he's doing the little things. And what I mean by that is, you know, he's first on the forecheck and he's taking those extra two strides to finish his hit. And, you know, when you're not scoring, I would say those things tend to slip and you start overthinking it and maybe hold on to the puck too long and not doing the little extra work. But I really enjoyed watching him last night. He was working extremely hard and it paid off. He got a couple points for it.
Ryan, we heard you on Donnie and Dolly talking about sort of the idea of cup chasing and looking back at sort of your departure from Vancouver and joining the Ducks organization with sort of a different viewpoint or a different perspective now that it's ended. How do you hope that your time in Vancouver is remembered now that it's all said and done?
I hope the fans remember that I left it out there every night. I played with heart and I was a guy that no matter what night, no matter if I was brutal that night or not, it was 100% of what I could have gave that night. And I put my body on the line and I have no regrets about that. I got two hip replacements now and people always ask me, would you do it over again knowing the end result? And absolutely I would. It's something I really enjoyed doing and playing in front of a Canadian market and with the passionate fans that we have. It was something I'll never forget. And last night with the ovation and all that, they're the best fans in the game by far.
Well, Ryan, you know, you say that's what you want your legacy to be, right? That people remember how much you put on the line for the Canucks. And I want to read this text that we just got from a listener. This is by Erica who sent this in. And she says, when I was a kid, my dad took me to my first ever Canucks game. At that game, Ryan, you scored 2 goals. You continued to be my favorite player until you left. I even had your jersey. I'm still a Canucks fan now, and you played a big part in that. Thank you. It was really nice seeing you come back to Vancouver last year. And then again, recently, the city loves you, and I hope that you will come and officially retire as a Canuck. So that's from Erica, and I can tell you that's representative of a lot of texts we're getting in. So I think that legacy is secure. And, you know, as she says at the end there, that she's hoping that you'll come and maybe officially retire as a Canuck. We've seen a couple of your former teammates do that. Obviously, Kevin Bieksa, Alex Edler, most recently. Is that something that holds some interest for you at some point?
Yeah, for sure. I think it definitely come full circle and like I said earlier, it's you know, looking back, I probably should have stayed here, but that 2011 loss was probably the hardest loss I've ever had in my entire life, and to be that close, I wanted to do it. And you know, I wish I just could do it over again. You can't. Hindsight's 2020, but, you know, I enjoyed my time in Anaheim, but my heart was always in Vancouver.
Ryan, we really appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much. I know the fans were really thrilled to hear from you as well. They were thrilled to see you, and hopefully something like that does happen down the road. But for now, all the best coaching, all the best at the tournament coming up here, and hey, if you're ever interested in the media game, you want to dip your toes in the water, we're here, all right?
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Of course. That is former Canucks center Ryan Kessler joining us here on Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. And, man, it's just a lot there, right? A really thoughtful interview from Ryan Kessler talking about, you know, his time in Vancouver, but also the transition, which was so difficult for him, the physical toll that the game took, not just his time here in Vancouver, but then obviously in Anaheim as well. And just sounds like somebody who has really kind of made peace with a lot of things, and that includes his time in Vancouver.
Yeah. Look, the amount that dude gave this franchise, right? I said it before, like, you're talking about a guy who really bled for this franchise. I mean, he's talking about the multiple hip replacements. He's not telling you about all the work that he's done in terms of visiting people to check in on his head injuries. And, you know, there was like a sequence in a playoff game where they were like, the only way you could go back in is if we cut off your finger. And he was like, do it. And they're like, no.
Like, we refuse to do that.
What are you talking about, man? So, I don't know. Maybe it's because I was at the right age, right? Like, I was late high school, early university when Kessler was at the peak of his powers, and he was just so much fun to watch. It's hard to imagine a more assertive, physical, like, all-encompassing the speed. You know, the way that early in his career, Kessler was one of those guys who'd get a million breakaways and never be able to finish. Right. And then he worked on that wrist shot, figured out the deflection game at the net front, became a 40-goal scorer, became an offensive driver when he hadn't been that, right? The huge concerns about his offensive game, and has a 50-assist season, 40-goal season. I mean, for me anyway, I think Kessler and Edler, to me, I think both probably should be Ring of Honor. And I know that we're getting to the point where it's like, how many guys can you really honor?
But yes,
when you're talking about that 2011 team, like, given its quality relative to most of what this franchise has produced, you know, the consecutive President's Trophies, the only team in franchise history to win the President's Trophy for the Canucks. You know, the Stanley Cup Final, they obviously fell a game short, but that was the golden era. And I don't, is it too much to have two guys' numbers retired and three Ring of Honor guys? Or I guess it would be four because you've got Luongo. Maybe. I mean, I guess that's a hard consideration for, you know, whoever makes those decisions with the Canucks, whatever board it is that sort of sits down and discusses these matters about how to commemorate.
It's an interesting thing, right? Because when you start the Ring of Honor, you're just thinking in the here and now, and you're not thinking like, oh, it's going to get filled up in 30 years or whatever, right? And it's, but because you even look at now this current edition of the team, though, like, who knows what the future holds, but Hughes.
Okay.
Miller.
Okay.
Besser. Patterson. Like, all strong arguments for some form of honor at the end of their careers. Not guaranteed, obviously, by any stretch, but just based on what they've already done.
Well, I don't know if you'd put Besser in just because he's out of contract after this year. There's like,
that's okay, but as soon as he signs the contract, then it's like the odds skyrocket.
He's going to be on pace for it.
Yeah.
Well, and like Miller on that contract, I mean, he's going to end up top five in franchise scoring.
Yeah.
Even if that sort of age cliff stuff hits, you know, Patterson.
Yeah, he'll still accumulate tons. Yeah.
Patterson's going to be here till for 8 years. If Patterson plays out that contract, he's probably going to be number one in games played and points, right? I mean, that's truly what we're talking about here. And then Quinn Hughes could leave tomorrow, and you'd be like,
well, we got to do something for him.
We probably should retire his number. I'm serious.
This is an interesting, you know, but it's, so I guess you start to forecast ahead a little bit, and I can understand a little bit of reticence, and I can also understand why you might look at the retirement ceremony as an alternative that you start to go to, right? I'm not even saying it's the right move necessarily, but I think I just want to recognize, like, the difficulties involved. There are actual difficulties involved. Three-Putt Shane texts in, just put the 2011 team in the Ring of Honor. Ends the debate. That's from Three-Putt Shane.
No.
But then you'd have everyone like saying you need to put the 82 and 94 teams in as well.
Yeah.
That's what Dollywell would say instantly.
And then you're going to get 20 years in. Yeah, exactly. You're going to be, people are going to be like, you got to put, and then you're putting Colin Campbell in the Ring of Honor, and no one wants to do that.
Have to avoid that, no matter what.
At all costs.
Mike in Maple Ridge says, if this group of guys doesn't make it to a conference finals, you aren't inducting guys to the Ring of Honor. It has to come with major team success. And he says, like all the other guys up before them who are up there, but that's not true for all the other guys who are up there. Like,
And also, like, Quinn Hughes has won the Norris. You know what I mean? Like, forget the Ring of Honor. Quinn Hughes is going to have his number retired at some point, even if he never signs another contract with the franchise. I mean, that's the Bure standard. Hall of Fame caliber talent who plays their best seasons in a Canucks uniform. Like that's why Luongo's number should be retired.
Mm.
But yeah, I mean, look, these are tricky decisions. They're obviously controversial. What I don't want to see, I think, is at this point, the like pettiness about like how a guy left,
you know, yes.
Like and it was such a complicated departure too. Right. I mean, did Kessler want to leave and go to a team that had a chance to win a cup? Yes. Did he want to be part of a rebuild? No. But it played out in such a messy fashion with like a management group that was kind of on their way out, right? That had deals on the table to trade him at the deadline that didn't quite come through. You know, the dishonesty that he showed in about requesting a trade was, you know, not just his doing. That was partly what everyone had kind of agreed on. Plus the trade, you know, had not been allowed to go to fruition for a variety of complicated reasons that are outside Kessler's control, right? Like in a healthier environment, you probably never put him in a spot where he has to have that moment. And then fans are like, well, he was dishonest, you know, like that was more a reflection of where the organization was sort of spinning out of control during that Tortorella season than it was a reflection on Kessler's character, you know? And so I just think same thing with the Luongo discussion, same thing with the Bure discussion, like focusing on that and blaming players for the deterioration of professional relationships that are often an awful lot more complicated. I just think that's a silly standard
also just,
to bring.
Like,
to
it
the
always struck me as equation. Not that out of the ordinary for the NHL.
No,
like maybe a little bit, but like, okay, star player who the team is on the downslide and he has a no trade clause, but both sides probably want him to be traded because it'll help kickstart a rebuild. And he exercises his no trade clause like that. It's just I get that it's not pleasant for anyone or the fans necessarily, but it also just it never seemed like this great controversy that should stain his reputation to me. Now, maybe part of that is and somebody texted in like, you know, Kessler's kind of getting unfair slings and arrows here because the management group at the time lost the plot, right? And it kind of came to be symbolic of that. I think there's something to that. The fact that it didn't kick off an immediately successful rebuild, right? But instead it kind of was the beginning point of this long time in the wilderness for the franchise.
So
that's tough.
But that's the subsequent management group.
Right, but it was Benning who made the trade, though, wasn't it?
At the trade deadline, Canucks management had trades
yes.
ready for Kessler that they were not permitted to execute. That group was subsequently fired, and Benning ultimately did the deal.
Yeah. But so I think it is tainted by what came after from the Benning, for what came immediately after from the Benning management
sure.
group.
Fair
I
enough.
Think it is.
Fair enough.
Right? Whereas if it had been a relatively quick rebuild or, you know, a return to success, I know they made the playoffs the next season, but like meaningful success,
yep.
I think it would have been a lot easier for fans to forget quicker
Man,
than they ended up doing.
It's also too bad if Willie Desjardins hadn't lost the plot in that first round series against the Calgary Flames, right? You would have got Sedin Twins versus Kessler.
Oh, that's true.
In the 20, like that's the thing that I really
Sedin Twins and Bieksa and Burrows against Kessler. That would have been awesome.
That would have been so much fun.
That would have been really cool.
Yeah, we really missed out. That's
although
the,
then the relationship might have been even harder to repair if that had happened.
1,000% given the way that Kessler would have chirped and played throughout that series. But of course, that edge, right? The same things that made Kessler a villain the moment he departed the Canucks were why he was so impactful when he was on the team, right? It's two sides of the exact same coin.
Mike, the urologist from Brockville, texted, the worst part was that I had to watch so much Lucas Spezza. That's what I hold against him. That's part of it.
Anyway, so the full accounting of that trade, right, is you get McCann.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent pick. But it becomes Eric Branson.
Mm-hmm.
You get Nick Bonino, actually a sager trade target than I thought in real time, like at the moment. But that becomes Brandon Sutter and then Spezza. Spezza,
yep.
Sutter, and Goodbranson for Kessler. That's how you spend a decade in the wilderness.
All right, we're going to take a break. Jason Bukala, our pal from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, he joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Your mind.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Still lots to get into from last night as the Canucks beat the Calgary Flames, get back to their winning ways after that setback against Edmonton. And Jason Buchla will join us here in just a minute as well. And in fact, we now have him on the line from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL director of amateur scouting. He is our guy, Jason Buchla. Books, what's going on, man?
Not too much, fellas. How are you today?
We're doing well. We just had a really good chat with Ryan Kesler, who was at the game in at Rogers Arena last night. So that was fun and lots to dive into from that game. And let's start with the debut for Lekker Mäki. He goes up on a line with JT Miller and Pugh Suter. He's playing power play minutes. Doesn't end up on the score sheet. But what did you think of Jonathan Lekker Mäki's first taste of NHL action?
Solid. Yeah, I thought he was solid. I liked his pace. I thought he was involved. You could see he, when he did have the puck on his stick or even when he was in motion off the puck, you could see that he was, you know, trying to move to the right spots to be creative and do what he does well, which is obviously produce offense. But more importantly, I thought that generally speaking, he really managed his shift length appropriately. And you know, you can see he didn't get too selfish with his lines, or pardon me, the length of his shifts, and he would go off maybe a little bit sooner than some of his line mates sometimes. It was all good. Like, he was managing the game, his pace was good, his compete was really good. Just gonna be a matter of time. He's close to be he's so close to being the best version of himself at the NHL level, or getting, you know, his current best version. I think there's going to be, you know, levels as he goes, but I was impressed. I thought he did very well.
Is he at the stage? Is he close enough where it feels like the remainder of that development can happen and is maybe best served to happen at the NHL level? Or do you still see a player who, you know, if Joshua and Besser are healthy soon, would be better served going back down to Abbotsford?
Great question. I probably need a segment of games to answer it more appropriately. You know, the first game, you're so amped up, you got so much energy, but you're going to have to see how he gets on the road for the first time, and he plays back-to-backs for the first time, and things like that, and then obviously plays to his identity, hopefully on the power play, and gets a few tucks that way or a few more looks. So too soon to tell, but, you know, in a very small sample size, absolutely NHL ready, but it's a grind, and there's a lot more than just playing games. It's you know, the daily lifestyle being an NHL player takes some adjusting to. So let's circle back on it in a segment of at least five games, and we'll have a better kind of understanding of where it fits.
Books, lots of chatter in the market after last night and after the game against the Edmonton Oilers that Elias Pettersson is back, quote unquote. What are you seeing from his game?
Yeah, much improved. I mean, he's moving his feet way more than he was early in the season. His small area bursts, especially, like, he was standing still a lot early in the season for me, and he definitely wasn't as explosive off the rush. So he's in motion more. He's getting the puck in areas where he can make plays. And, you know, even on the goal last night, you know, he beats Kevin Ball to the net. Like, Ball's a big rig that goes, he overemphasizes his coverage up the wall, and then he's too slow to get back to the net front, and then of course the puck's in their net. But I like him. I think he looks solid now, better, trending in the right direction. You know, I've read a lot about you know, the coach was imploring better practice habits and better preparation, and perhaps that's gotten through to him, and it's proving out to be good results right now. This is what he can be. Everybody knows that. You guys have seen it. I've seen it. But it's got to stretch out for the rest of the year and into playoffs. I'm sure it will. I'm comfortable saying that it will. But definitely on the rise. Much better than the beginning of the year, because it was below average. Let's just say that.
Is there, as well as he's playing, is there still another level here? Because sort of my view is, I think we're kind of getting a little bit carried away with this notion that he's back, mostly because when he's really back, when he's dialed, we're going to know it. It looks different to me even than what we saw last night did.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that, you know, on his worst nights, when he's really back, he's going to look close to what he was last night. You're giving him a compliment because he's tracking in the right direction. His points have obviously gone in the right direction. His production's going in the right direction. All that is positive, and you can't, you know, knock him for positive results. It's solid momentum, but I don't think he's at his level. I don't think he's at his optimum level yet, but it's trending in that direction. You know, when he starts to catch pucks on the weak side flank on the power play or otherwise, and he goes bar down, like, he can rip it, and, you know, some other things happen. He goes net front and continues to produce around the crease, you know, some tips, rebounds, whatever. I agree with you. I still think there's another level, but I'm much happier today saying that it's trending in a positive direction.
Well, and I think for me, Jason, you know, the biggest reason for optimism coming out of last night specifically for Pettersson, because you're right about, you know, moving his feet and engaging physically and looking faster, all those things are really important, but I think I also just saw a bit of a different mentality with the puck, right? And not only with the puck, but you could tell that when he got the puck, he had already thought a step or two ahead and was ready to make an attacking move of some sort, was ready to try to make a dangerous play. And that was just completely absent from his game earlier in the year, right? Where it looked like he wanted to play hot potato with it and get it off his stick as soon as he had it. And last night, I think we started to see some of that confidence come back. And, you know, that ability to process and make really tough, dynamic, dangerous plays, that's always been his calling card. And I think we need to see even more than that, but at least if he can get that back, then he's got a chance to, you know, get close to the type of player we've seen him be in the past.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think back to some of the games, especially on the road, where it seemed like it was a hot potato on his stick, you know, and not as much last night. Guys like Pettersson, especially when the Canucks are going, they really are a tenacious group that play a fast attacking style. And I mean, they're a motion group that are hard to defend, but, you know, they'll check back with speed as well. And when skill guys have the puck on their stick and they're feeling it and they're playing fast, it obviously looks great when it's really going. And that's when we see Pettersson at the best of his ability, when he's not moving his feet and he's a light guy and it's bouncing around. I mean, it is the NHL. Everybody's going to look pedestrian, you know, no matter how good you are when you're not moving your feet. So I always go back to the B game. You know, we've always talked about that, right, guys? Like, on your worst day, your B game's got to rise. And so the problem with him is that his A game fell off, and then his B game, I'm talking about moving to space and defending properly and being more active and compete was more competitive. Those things weren't great, and that really stood out beyond his A game. So now if he can combine the two, it's going to track in the right direction. I know that sounds really simple, but on his worst days when he's not scoring, he's still got to do all those other things to be productive for the group, the better of the group. And that's move your feet, get in on the forecheck, do that that ass backwards check that he likes to do on occasion and stuff like that. So I'm not beating him up today. It's progress. It's good. I thought he was really good. Canucks looked good last night. But, you know, they've laid a couple eggs as well in the last couple of weeks. And it's nice to see them rebound, which tells you something. But at the same token, you know, I'd like to see in segments of 10 games, not having two games in the segment like the Carolina game and then the Edmonton game the other night.
Yeah, well, that's exactly where I was going to go with this, Books. Like, since we last chatted, the Canucks, you know, beat the Flames, good performance against the Kings, but thoroughly outclassed by the Edmonton Oilers. And sort of my concern coming out of that game was, I have this theory that as you get along and the good teams bump into the great teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs, you'll know when a team has sort of hit their level, when they stop being able to generate scoring chances of any meaningful variety. And that's what that game against the Oilers felt like to me on Saturday, Books, watching it. How do you sort of make sense of where this team is at this point? They're first in the Pacific today, but they've seemed to struggle and especially struggle to generate offense against some of the elite teams that they've faced on occasion this season.
Yeah, and they're not alone, Drancer. Like,
no.
The league is, when you get in from October till the end of November, let's say, Thanksgiving weekend, U.S. Thanksgiving weekend, let's suggest that is a target date. you're going to find some outliers, game outliers. It's curious. The league gets going. Everybody gets sort of comfortable or not. They're dealing with different things, different coaches, different just getting back into, you know, the flow of the league and the style that everybody plays every night. And these games happen, and they've happened a lot in the month of October and the beginning of November. Like across the league, save percentages are down, goals against averages are up. Every team, some teams look like they could win the cup one night, and then they look like they, you know, would struggle in a 7-game series with the San Jose Sharks the next day. So it's, I don't have an answer for you, but I would say this, that as you segment your games though, and you start to look at your schedule and things get harder from definitely Christmas on, you absolutely have to figure out a way on those off days that you're not feeling it, not to look like they look like on Saturday night. Because as everybody knows, when it gets into February, March, and then obviously April, you just can't afford that. So I don't have a straight line answer for you. I will say this: if we're having the same conversation in February, that 2 out of every 10 games are sort of like that, then that's a problem, and it's got to be rectified in short order. It better be rectified by then, because by then, February, March, if you're still happening, you can't fix it. And that's when playoff series get away from you in a hurry.
Well, and I think the other part of it, Books, is that it's not just that they're laying these eggs occasionally. It's that I think fans are still waiting for them to put a real kind of statement game together against a good team. Now, LA's, you know, above the playoff bar right now, but I don't know that people look at them as a Stanley Cup contender necessarily. And, you know, you look at the really good teams they've played so far, Edmonton, Carolina, New Jersey. You go back to Tampa, even they've tended to struggle. Like, how long before, because that's 4 games, right? It's 4 games spread out over, you know, 6 weeks of season or whatever. How long before that kind of thing starts to become a real legitimate concern for you about a team's ability to match up with kind of the upper crust of the NHL?
Well, those three teams that you just mentioned right there, they're in the top. Like, those are Stanley Cup contending teams. So Edmonton, Jersey, and then, of course, we're going to start looking at Vegas. Vegas is a juggernaut. That, to me, is going to be something to monitor going forward here, because the depth of Vegas will really challenge not only the Vancouver Canucks, but a lot of people in the West, especially on the back end, because they can play the game a variety of ways. Perseverance, push through, all those types of things. The real character of the group, the litmus test, is going to continue to evolve against the harder teams. And, you know, they haven't been – those three games, as soon as you mention those three games, I think to myself right away, well, this is they feel like more of a team that can get through the first round, lose in the second round, based on what I've seen so far this year. But I do believe they're better than that. You get my drift?
Mm-hmm.
They look like a team that's good enough to get through a round. Not so sure beyond that, but I think they're going to get better. They haven't had their A game per se yet. Pedersen hasn't been great. They dealt with injuries. Their starting goaltender, you know, obviously is not back yet. So, you know, let's not forget they had some people moving in and out of the lineup, 9 new bodies, Demko hurt. They've dealt with distraction too, fellas. So I don't want to let them off the mat, because character is character, but I do believe in this team. I think they do have character. I think the coaches will get them trending in the really positive direction in due order here. But the record's fine. There's been a few hiccups, but they still haven't iced their best team yet.
Books, you mentioned Vegas's depth, and one thing that's sort of fascinating about this Pacific division pecking order, and I think for both Vancouver and Vegas, you're talking about hyper aggressive front offices, right? Like, one thing I think we know today about both Vegas and Vancouver is that the teams we're talking about now and how they measure up are going to look pretty different by the time we're having that conversation in April, you know, or March. When you think about this Canucks team, and obviously our focus has been on defense throughout this season, and also when you think about Vegas, I mean, what would you look at as like the nuclear option where you see the headline in the morning and you're like, oh no, the rest of the Pacific's in trouble because Vegas has added what?
Oh, jeez, Vegas has added something that's going to just absolutely blow your socks off to figure it out how they do it, first of all. You know, Vegas would go out and they would do something like add, you know, Erasmus Anderson. You know, they'd pull something like that out of their, you know, wherever. And, or, you know, they, or, or they'd, they'd it had, you know, I'm just thinking Calgary because it's fresh on my mind from last night, but, you know, like a Nazem Kadri type player or they find some way to fit a Jonathan Huberto in to even add more scoring up front. Like when they go hard at a player or they try and figure something out, they pull something off that's, you know, remarkable. And let's not forget that the Vegas Golden Knights have zero loyalty to their current group. They that's just the way they operate the front office. They want to win, but as they've shown in the past, they'll move people out. It doesn't matter who you are if they think that they're going to be better with whatever it is. So, they don't actually need much, if anything at all, Vegas, to be quite honest with you. I like that lineup the way it looks right now. But they will do something. They've got Cole Schwind playing on the bottom of the lineup. You know, then maybe they're going to look for some more muscle. But that's not the way. That's not their MO, fellows. They go after the big ticket items. They want to shop for Ferraris. They don't want to shop for Toyota Corollas. So that's just the way they operate.
Who's the best winger you think moves then?
I don't know yet. It's too soon for me to say that. I don't want to start throwing out names. I don't even know who the best winger is yet for trade. I mean, there's going to be guys that continue to evolve here in certain ways, and you know, we're going to talk about expiring contracts and all kinds of things.
Evgeny Malkin, welcome to Vegas.
Oh,
that has the right ring to it for sure. Eric Karlsson, and he like totally rediscovers his form.
Listen, don't get me started on Eric Karlsson. If a team wants to go the other way and not win a Stanley Cup, they should acquire Eric Karlsson. Just upset the apple cart just enough.
Don't get Bruce Cassidy started on Eric Karlsson either. I don't think we need to see that experiment play out in real time,
Jamie.
Hey, one other guy on the Canucks I did want to ask you about, Books, is Erik Brännström. Of course, you know, former much-hyped prospect and then has lost that shine, ends up coming to the Canucks as kind of a throw-in in the Tucker Poolman cap dump. But now all of a sudden, you know, he's played 11 games for them, got his first goal last night, and it seems like he's started at least to earn some trust from Rick Tocchet. I thought it was really important, actually. He kind of bounced back last night after a tough performance against Edmonton. And, you know, what are you seeing from Erik Brännström? Does he look like a capable everyday defender, you know, even just in a bottom pairing role for a good team like the Canucks right now?
He's punched way above his pay grade for me so far. Brännström coming into the league, I thought he was going to be that power play quarterback, transitional guy, push the play, et cetera, et cetera. His defending never arrived. Like, it was just never good enough. And, you know, to your point, you know, -3, I believe, in the Edmonton game the other night when I broke him down. And then he was much better last night, made some real good plays, broke up that 1-2-on-1 in the middle of the ice, and obviously scored the goal. Good enough for where the Canucks are right now. Absolutely earned enough trust to be a regular in the lineup today. Not so sure that that's a perfect fit come a 7-game series against the Edmonton Oilers in the spring. Not sure about that yet. We'll let that plane out a little bit more, but certainly he's a guy that looks like he's capable of playing, you know, that 12 minutes a night type thing and, you know, matching up against bottom six guys. My issue when the games get really, really hard, and he's still going to have to prove it, even though he's been great. I'm not discounting everything. He's going to have to prove it to me against top six opponents or at least middle six consistently on the road in heavy games. So that's where I'm talking about the Vegases and the Edmontons and, you know, those types of opponents. But on balance, he's come in and he's done a great job. I got to give him a lot of credit because he's bounced around. And he's certainly, this is the best version of him at the NHL, what you guys are seeing out there right now.
Yeah, he's been a really pleasant surprise, no doubt about it, for the Canucks. You know, Books, before we let you go here, we've got a few more minutes, and this is a big subject to bring up at the end here, but I'm really curious to get your thoughts on the CHL NCAA news and the change, of course, which will allow even players who have played in the CHL to retain their NCAA eligibility, and no one really knows exactly what the landscape is going to look like, how it's going to play out. But obviously, I know you're really plugged in to junior hockey, obviously, as a scout. You talk to a lot of people in that world. I mean, what are your kind of big picture thoughts about what this means for players, what the landscape could look like going forward here?
I think it's good for players to have as many options as possible to play at the highest level they can play at to determine their value
and what the trajectory is, whether they're a pro or whether they're not. And I'm, when I say pro, obviously we think NHL players, but there's also some that will project out to be, you know, really good European pros, which mm-hmm. is great too. They'll make a great living. But that's the first thing out of the box. I think that any time that you can develop at a higher league and before you go on to play, if your choice is the NCAA, I think that that's a great thing. And it's good for hockey. There are a ton of moving parts here, And it's already started to be felt across the landscape in Tier 2 hockey. There's Tier 2, like Brandon Pridham's boy, the assistant GM in Toronto, his boy Jack was playing in West Kelowna. He's now suiting up for the Kitchener Rangers. So you're seeing some Tier 2 guys already move to major junior outfits. You're also seeing some teams in the States, like American International has already indicated after this decision, they're going to go back to being a Division 2 school. They're not going to be able to afford being a Division 1 school. So it's affecting budgets south of the border. But on balance, out of the box, it's good for the players, but now the adjustments have to be made. And it's going to be a huge CBA discussion, guys, because as you guys know, if I, as a scouting director, draft a kid out of the Vancouver Giants, I've got a 2-year clock on him to sign him to be an NHL player. It's 4 years for kids out of the USHL going to college, and it's 4 years for Europeans. So that's going to be a CBA issue that has to come up, because what happens if I'm a Vancouver Canuck scout, or if the Vancouver Canucks organization say, we really like this kid, he needs another year, he's going to go to the NCAA for another year or two to develop, and we're going to sign him then. They have to open up those types of opportunities and that type of window to continue their development path. So a lot going to be unpacked. The one thing is, and I know this is long-winded, but the school package is going to be something that has to be worked out too. If you played the CHL for 3 years, and let's say you got $36,000 in your bank account for schooling, by all the GMs that I've talked to, it sounds like you're going to be able to invest that in your schooling in the States if you leave the CHL. And that's a good news thing for the NCAA, because they only have 16 full rides on their roster. And anytime you can save a buck to bring in another player, that's a good thing for them too.
Books, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the insight. We'll chat next week.
Awesome, boys. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former NHL Director of Amateur Scouting, weighing in on Lekker Mäki's debut, some other things with the Canucks, and the big change in the amateur hockey world there as well with the CHL-NCAA agreement. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you've already got me looking ahead now to the trade deadline and wondering what Vegas is going to do. Vegas not in LTI as of right now. They are accruing cap space.
Yeah,
they have cap space. Rarely been the case for the Vegas Golden Knights. So not a lot of cap space, but it's kind of similar number to the Canucks, where it's like projected right now around 5.5 by the deadline. The Vegas Golden Knights with $5.5 million of cap space at the deadline should be a very scary proposition for other Pacific and Western Conference teams.
Yeah, I mean, and we know, like, honestly, this is going to be one of the most interesting parts of what we're going to be watching for over the balance of the season. Like, what if things go sideways in Toronto? Right? Are they going to be a team that, would they have interest in Mitch Marner, or do they buy the Mitch Marner can't win when the chips are down thing? Because they certainly didn't buy that with Jack Eichel.
I bet they would be interested in Marner. 100%.
You know, because that's sort of the top winger that we're talking about, right? Potentially. A lot. You have to hit a parlay even there to even get to that point. Frank Vatrano? Probably swing bigger than that? Do you expect them to swing bigger than that?
Well, yeah, because the question for me is, okay, it's great to go through the UFA wingers, but Tomas Hertl wasn't a UFA last year,
nope,
right? And that came out of nowhere. And it was like, oh, we have Tomas Hertl now. So that's almost the class of player I would be more curious about, right? The guy on the with a little bit of term where maybe other teams aren't even calling about him. They're not sure he's available. And then, boom, Vegas lands him.
Can I give you the nightmare scenario from a Vancouver perspective? Edmonton storms through the second half, wins the division. Canucks locked into a first-round matchup against the Vegas Golden Knights. The Vegas Golden Knights, on the day of the trade deadline, execute a deal to acquire Brad Marchand from the Boston Bruins.
That would be a nightmare.
That's the nightmare scenario.
That is absolutely the nightmare scenario. Oh, my goodness. I did not know where you were going with that.
But I delivered, right?
You delivered. That was a good one.
Let's go.
All right. Well, we'll give everyone a chance to think on that one for a little bit. We'll take break here.
Or not.
No, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to tell anyone what to do during the commercial break.
Oh, okay. You can.
No. Do whatever you want. Just come back. The whiteboard next in the final segment here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.